Thank you. I'd like to begin just by thanking Monica and Mimi and David for inviting me, a geographer, to have these conversations with you. And I've also found that this 10 years thing is actually quite a cathartic process. So it caused me to also think about my past 10 years, and I realised that it's also been, for me, this month, 10 years since I've been working at Durham University on questions around data. It's 10 years ago that I began a project with Steve Graham on biometric borders and what we call the governing of mobility and biometrics. And I realised something in thinking about this 10 years, and that is that I really began thinking about the mobility of data, and in particular with work with my colleague at the University of Amsterdam, Marieke de Gorde, by thinking about the idea that the mobility of data was really about the data crossing domains. So we were very interested in how data on the movement of people and the movement of money was being redeployed for security purposes. So our interest was, how is this data generated for commercial purposes being repurposed? How was the data itself travelling into new domains? And I've realised that over the 10 years that have followed, and perhaps most recently in my book, The Politics of Possibility, that I'm concerned perhaps more with thinking about data as a means of reconciling security and mobility. That if we think about a world of globalisation in which increased mobilities leave a trail of data traces, and how those data traces themselves become framed in such a way as to make particular sorts of interventions possible. So let's begin it by thinking about one site where these interventions take place. This is Vision Box. It's a row of automated border gates. It's a gleaming glass and steel promise of a biometrically secured mobility. So the company that we were researching, who write the algorithms for this, talk about security and facilitation. Facilitation, c'est facile, it's easy. The movement through the e-gate is easy. Every 16 seconds of stillness experienced at the e-gate is also a time, though, of teeming data streams and risk calculations, so of teeming activity. When the software, as it was described to us, reaches back into enriched databases to read and assess the border crosser's claim to mobility. So the machine-readable travel document and the biometric template commune with a risk assessment engine of algorithms to decide on the person's legitimacy in terms of their claim to mobility. So this, it seems to me, is not simply a question of data moving across domains, travelling and being deployed in new ways, but it is precisely, as we talk about in this workshop, mobility as a relation, data in association and correlation with other pieces of data that render possible new forms of mobility and, of course, new forms of interruption and detention. So I want to begin by thinking about mobility, data, and perception. What does it mean exactly for Vision Box to claim to reach back into enriched databases? At the automated gate, the work of the analytics is concerned with cutting out pieces from across a vast array of heterogeneous data sources and types, video, text, structured data in the form of past travel transactions and so on, before stitching them together in a composite of other data elements. Now, of course, this is not historically unprecedented. We can see here Francis Galton's 19th century, as he described it, composite portraits of criminality, where effectively the facial images were overlaid one over the other to try to define some sense of a biometric template of a human propensity for future forms of criminality or infraction. And in a sense, the idea of big data itself is not historically unprecedented. Ian Hacking, in his work on Galton, talks about the avalanche of statistical number, an avalanche of number. And he, of course, is concerned with the making up of people by the state, so how the state mobilises these forms of enumeration. But how should we think about that avalanche in our contemporary moment, with all of the appeal to the idea of big data? If we understand mobilities in their intersection with a geography, as Pete Addy describes it, an orientation to oneself to others and to the world. So mobility as an orientation to oneself and to others in the world. How are the algorithms in big data analytics transforming that orientation to ourselves and to others in the world? Now, writing on perception, the philosopher Henri Bergson, of course, describes what he calls a transformative scene from fairyland. Perception for him is as if a magician's wand conjured something that may have nothing in common, he says, with the matter from which it started. So the difficulty of the problem, Bergson describes, is that we imagine perception to be a kind of photographic view of things, taken from a fixed point by an organ of perception. So for him, perception is precisely about the carving up of an otherwise mobile stream of movement. So the knowledge of a material world given to us by perception, as Bergson describes, it works a dividing up of matter that is always too sharply defined and always subordinated, he says, to action, to practical means, so the need to carve up perception so that action is possible. So for Bergson, perception is attuned to action, to the carving out of a series of still images that allows us to act on something, on ourselves and on the world. So to be clear about this, then, I think all forms of perception, human and non-human, are intractably bound up with attention and action, with how an image of something or someone of interest is brought to attention for action. The practices of governing mobility through data appear to me to institute just such a curious form of perception, drawing on the one hand, we've talked about science already this morning, extensively on the spatial methods of the mathematical and physical sciences, but yet simultaneously claiming to produce an enhanced version of perception, to capture a totality of images of the moving data stream beyond human perceptibility. So to be able to perceive something not otherwise perceptible to the human. So I'm suggesting that Vision Box promises to read the movement of the border crosser in a way not otherwise amenable to the border guard. The border guard must relearn how to relate to him or herself and others in this reading. So the question then for Bergson and his method is not how perception arises, but to know, and I'm quoting from him here, how and why is this image chosen to form part of my perception while an infinite number of other images remain excluded from it? So how a perception that should be the image of movement itself, an image of the whole, becomes limited and reduced to the image of that which interests you. An infinite number of images remaining excluded. So it's just this process of reduction and the filtering of experience that I'm interested in terms of how mobilities are being governed in and through data. So I want to just talk to you briefly, if I can, about one example of this in the world, and that's MapReduce. MapReduce is a form of computing, a way of analysing data across diverse data sources. So I'm suggesting that in data mobilities, radical heterogeneity of forms and experiences of movements are reduced. So the experience of complexity in a movement is reduced. Elements of data are analysed together as a composite of correlations indifferent to their singularity. And I'm going to discuss with you how data are analysed so that what in my book I call life signatures of mobilities are written in and through the correlations and associations among data points. So these data points need not necessarily map onto a particular individual. They will be a composite of elements across people and things. The patterns of life that are so readily claimed as the world captured by Vision Box, so the E-gate promises to know a pattern of life of the border crosser, we might think much more properly in mobility studies as being durational, multiple, continuous, plural, and qualitative. A past failed visa application, or previous journeys and travel patterns, money transfers, associations with other people and things, we might say, well, these are contingent singularities. And I'll say some more about these in a moment. But as mobilities become governed through data, these singularities are chained together in chains of association rules. So like the modern physics that Bergson and Deleuze differently describe, the algorithms extract and detach data from a whole, drawing a series of spatial images as vantage points on a mobile world. So I'm saying algorithms are our contemporary form, if you like, of the camera. They're taking snapshots on a mobile world. While the analytics claim to afford a vantage point on all of life's patterns and tendencies, a whole picture, the software designers promise us, in practice, they collapse qualitative difference into enumeration and action. So what matters is, can you find a way to act upon this pattern? And in this specific sense, and in spite of all talk by geographers of verticality and volume, I'm suggesting data analytics flatten the border. They literally produce flat files on people and things. So relational mobilities become instead calculative relations, algorithmic relations, if this and this in association with this. So I don't have enormous amount of time to discuss it in detail, but I just want to give you one example of this, and that would be MapReduce. So this is a programming model originally designed by Google to transform the indexing of Google web pages. So the idea is, how do you index this vast and rapidly growing source of data? MapReduce is a framework for parallel processing across vast data sets. It's feasible precisely because it works through a map step and a reduce step. So in the mapping, the calculation can be distributed across various nodes and indeed across spatial spaces, of course, as well. And in the reduce step, the calculation is returned to a master calculation. I'll give you an example so it makes more sense. So if we were thinking about how does MapReduce work in the E-gate, in automated borders, the first map step could conduct analysis at the level of passenger name record data. So the mapping could analyse all of the data points in everybody's passenger name record data. That would be a vast amount of data to analyse, but it would be conducted across multiple nodes. But then what would be returned would be the results from those plural calculations into the reduce step, which would then match those results across some other set of data. So for example, it could be the warnings index. So from the map step, you get the analysis of the passenger name record, and from the reduce, you get the what they call the intersection results, actually, to speak back to intersections. What this means is that it's then possible, thinking back to what we've seen with Snowden and so on, to say, well, this is called sovereign information sharing, because the airlines see the passenger name record data and the governments or national authorities see their risk scores and warnings index, but nobody sees both sides because the algorithm calculates the intersection across the results. So why does this matter? I want to suggest that it complicates the idea of mobility. In simple terms, MapReduce changes the nature of what can be analysed, what can be perceived across multiple data formats and databases across a distributed data landscape. You can see it here. MapReduce unlocks the hidden value of rapidly expanding data, sensor output, videos, log files, location data, genomics, behavioural data are just some of the data forms driving Hadoop MapReduce use. So the idea is the heterogeneity of the data, the differences in the data, and its spatial location, I'm saying, no longer matter with technologies like MapReduce. So transforms the nature of what can be analysed. But as the author of one of the world's most highly cited papers on these techniques, Rakesh Agrawal, reports in an interview, he says, this is a completely new world. Past forms of data analysis, he says, used a statistical notion of what was interesting. So the prevailing mode of decision making, he said, somebody makes a hypothesis, tests if it was correct, and repeats the process. He says, with these forms that we see with, for example, with MapReduce and distributed computing, he says, the decision making process has changed. A series of algorithms will generate all the rules and debate which of them was valuable. So generates the rules and decides which of those rules are valuable. These rules are about who should be stopped, who should be searched, further questions, detention. So the border decision itself becomes lodged into a form of algorithmic calculation. So if the advent of what has come to be known as big data analytics is changing even the nature of what questions can be asked, it's changing the nature of the queries that can be asked by the border guard or by the security analyst, it's changing the nature of what can be calculated. But what's the significance of this for the governing of mobilities? So, of course, the interception of terabytes of unstructured data for security has attracted a great deal of political attention in the wake of Snowden's revelations about NSA, GCHQ's PRISM and temporal programmes. But the locus of that debate has resided, I think, with the idea of a mass surveillance or a collection and storage of personal communications and transactions data in bulk. There's been almost no attention to the processes of data stream analysis. What happens to the stuff that's not really collected as such, but is analysed? You know, it's a kind of legal loophole, in a sense, where it's offshored, in a sense. Where is this sovereign information sharing taking place? There's been very little attention paid then to the relationship between this mass of data and an object or person of interest. How does somebody or something come to be an object or person of interest? What you can see here is a visualization of TIBCO systems, who we've also been looking at in our research. And this is a representation of a set of associations for somebody who was stopped at the US-Mexico border. So it's showing how multiple sources of data, including the data from drones being used at the US-Mexico border, so spatial imagery from drones, how this material is analysed together to say, yes, an interception should happen here, this person should be stopped, and their movement should be halted. So what we have here is a kind of, I think, a political threshold when the algorithm has decided what the strongest relationships are. At this point where the threshold is defined, someone or something of interest becomes perceptible. So where MapReduce is used to set the threshold of risk for border controls, who poses the risk, or the threshold of what Marika de Holder has called a nexus to terrorism, so whose financial transactions ought to be stopped, whose assets ought to be frozen, whose bank account should be looked at, this threshold seems to me to be now established through association rules, through a set of associations between somebody's transactions and a whole set of other correlations with other transactions not perceptible to a human being, not reviewable by a human being. So it's a co-occurrence of particular data elements that are giving rise to a personal object of interest, a series of halts in an otherwise moving data stream. What I want to do now is offer you a kind of counterpoint to this, to this sense of a world of mobility governed through correlation. And I want to do it through the work of Pakistani artist Barney Abidi, whose work is concerned with thinking about borders. And I want to talk just very briefly, first of all, about her work on what she calls digital printing of security barriers, A to L. So Abidi explains that she wants to bring back to the surface the borders that otherwise escape our attention in Karachi streets. Her barriers range from the truck bomb-proof planter outside the UK, the British High Commission in Karachi, through to a shipping container that's used at the outside the American consulate. Her use of inkjet printing as a technique produces this kind of digitized border. So the technique itself is reproducible, it's flattened, it's digitized. You can see that her border illustrations are extracted from the remainder of their environment. So they're extracted and they're reduced, like a kind of scientific illustration. But the way that she arranges them in an alphabetized array of horizontal and vertical lines seems to invite the viewer to enter the space, to consider anew the architecture of control and signal the possibility of transgression. So beneath the halts of the digital border, I want to suggest, using Arbidi's work, another form of life teems with movement, but also waits and stops. Do I have 5 minutes to just show a quick film, if I can find a way to get it to play? So what you're watching here is one of Abidi's videos. It's called The Distance From Here. What Abidi does is dramatise the mundane acts of waiting in line for immigration assessment, the stilling and the pausing of the border crosser in the making of a claim to recognition, a kind of durational time in which their stories, the stories of the border crosser, and in fact the material weight of their documents, the slow typing of the documents, the legal documentation, seems to defy the security and facilitation of the automated border control. So the idea of an easy facilitation, a lightness of the border, is shown differently in Abidi's video, her video artworks, where she's looking very much at the idea of the weight in both senses, the waiting and the stillness, but also the weight in terms of the burden and the heaviness of having to say, here are my papers and documents, here I am to be verified. She had to reproduce this scene in a vacant lot because the original scene of the British High Commission did not allow for the use of recording devices, so she had to portray a kind of fictional account of what it was really like to wait for your documents to be approved. So what am I suggesting here is that in her work we see a potential for new kinds of relations. When we think about a data point used by the automated e-gate, which says here is a failed past visa application, or in fact here is somebody associated with someone with a failed past visa application, I think that what Abidi's work does is shows to us what that failed past visa application might really mean. What kind of a story is this? What does the data point mean? One can never finally and definitively know what the life picture of a person is in their data. The temporality of their experience that's so vividly shown in her video, what we might say with Bergson is durational time, is never fully captured by science's instruments of perception. So here we have a different way of thinking about the space-time of border controls. 2 minutes to conclude, is that okay? So I want to just conclude, I'm doing a lot, aren't I, in 25 minutes, but I want to try and pull together some of the implications. So as the art historian Jonathan Crary explains in his compelling account of the changes, the historical changes in the nature of perception, he says, perception transformed alongside new technological forms of spectacle display and projection. So as instruments of perception, I'm suggesting that data analytics not only focus human attention on particular persons or things of interest in movement, but they also annul and discard as redundant much of the material context from which those persons and things emerged. So I want to just talk a little bit about the implications. I was reading recently Mark Hansen's new book, Feed Forward, where he also talks about transition to a new paradigm of mobility. So he's calling this paradigm of mobility, he's referring to a move from a cinematic age to what he calls the service of connection and connectivity. So Hansen is interested precisely in this shifting form of perception towards mobile devices and the analysis of data. So just to conclude with three final points. First, I want to just sum up what I was saying about perception and halts. The halts that divide up the data stream are correlative and not linear causal. So in this chain analysis, this is from the US Department of Homeland Security, the person of interest in the middle is emerging from correlative links between activities funded, member of, listed, acquainted with, travelled to, countries visited, and geopolitical events. So the person of interest emerges from that set of relations. What kind of relation of mobility is a correlation? What kind of relation of mobility is a correlation? One in which all mobilities are implicated in the setting of the gauge. So the data traces of my 16 seconds in VisionBox's e-gate at Heathrow, I know that those data traces are communing with those of others whose waiting in line, results in a rejected claim. But those traces, my traces, also feed a curve of normalities from which some future anomaly will halt the movement of some as yet unknown future person. So this sense of how AD, you know, AD talks about how we relate to ourselves and others, the algorithms are shaping the way my data traces will commune with the data traces of others. What kind of ethical relation is that? So second, and I think as Catherine Hales in her work suggests, there's a sense that these data mobilities are replacing a narrative of life stories, complex life stories, with the stories that can be told with databases. So as Hales puts it, database and narrative are different species. Databases pass information according to logical categories, but indeterminate data is represented with a null value or not represented at all. So she says narratives gesture towards the unspeakable and the inexplicable. And I want to suggest with Arbidi's work that we have exactly this sense of an inexplicable, that which cannot be said about someone's actual experience of, for example, a failed visa application. The data analytics that I'm interested in tend to reproduce, to reduce the inexplicable to the calculable, to distances data point to data point. So if when TIBCO are analysing vast quantities of data at the US-Mexico border, what they describe as a real-time decision of the border guard is thought to be a calculated decision from these multiple data sources. But what kinds of stories can be told with data analytics? What happens to the things that cannot be spoken, or that which is not even fully accessible to us of ourselves? How do we speak back to the claim, well, this is who you are, as a set of correlations and a mobile person, this is who you are? How do we speak back? So just finally, I want to say something about politics. I want to suggest that using data, governing mobility through data, has important consequences for the form of politics and how we think about the politics of mobility. Because these sorts of processes that I've described have, make a sort of claim in the world. They say, this is the world, here it is, all data can be rendered tractable. So they carve out and convert radical heterogeneity into flat differences of degree. It appears that everything is calculable and everything about an uncertain future can somehow be decided. And I want to suggest that today's data analytics promise exactly this kind of convenience. So the security facilitation nexus, if you like, or that relation, promises this kind of convenience of existence. But then we have to ask, well, then what's the need for politics? If politics expresses the fallibility of our world, the impossibility of resolving or reducing these complex questions to these sorts of issues, then we have a problem, because politics is confronting an analytics that imagines an infallible world where the most turbulent of situations can be rendered tractable. So when we go to Gatwick Airport in our research and we're told that, of course, given ISIS, now EasyJet flights to Istanbul are under renewed scrutiny. You can imagine, you know, looking at the way that this is done by Homeland Security, geopolitical events and the correlation of geopolitics to the person is changing the way that we think about, or that Gatwick Airport think about, the EasyJet flight to Istanbul. We know they're correlating the data points from Twitter feeds, from social media networks, from biometric data and other transactional data. So what chance in this correlation at Gatwick Airport is there for the weighting and the weight of Barney Abidi's lines that she looks at? What kind of claim to mobility can be made in a world where the risk scores of every move are thought to already be calculable in advance? How can the thing that would otherwise be imperceptible to a database be retold in a narrative that makes it possible for another sort of claim to mobility to be made and to be heard? Thank you.